Welcome to Hungry Dads, a couple of guys who started a podcast as an excuse to bring snack food into the house. On this week's show...
Do not underestimate mustard.
It's an interesting philosophical discussion.
You're a man with crotch fungus who loves Doritos.
You just froze my brain off.
What is going on?
Hello and welcome to episode 70 of the Hungry Dads podcast. I'm Rod Budget.
I'm Hugh Gallen.
And Hugh, eating is dangerous. I mean, it's a lot of fun. We talk about the fun aspects, but it is a dangerous, dangerous thing. So let's spend some time tonight talking about food hazards and food safety.
You hear a lot about cholesterol, pesticides, spoilage, preservatives, stuff like that. But I think everyone's heard everything they need to hear about that stuff.
Some more practical Hungry Dad style safety measures. So let's start out with something we mentioned way back in episode 8, and this is the pizza grease valley of death. And if you didn't hear the episode, just quickly what that is. When you get a big floppy slice of pizza like you'll get in New York City, or pizza by the slice I think has made it to other areas around the country, you're going to want to fold that over and make a sandwich out of it. This inherently creates grease that is trapped in the valley when you fold the pizza over. And if you're not careful, that's going to drip right out of that slice of pizza. And it's hot. Not only is it hot, but it will stain clothing, which is a hazard, not necessarily a safety hazard, but it might burn you. It might stain you.
Pizza is uniquely dangerous. It's got a geometric flatness to it, an unenclosed nature, exposed cheese, and a tendency to be served piping hot. Not only is your mouth in danger, as you said, but so is your shirt, your chin, your arm, your pants, your chair, your Bjorn baby, whatever might be below your head. You have to maintain perfect balance. Grease valleys of death are a threat of nature, second only to tsunamis and tornadoes.
It's a valley of death. So my pro tip is when you're eating the pizza and holding it in your mouth, make sure you tilt it upwards a little bit. You know, the back of the pizza needs to always be at the very least parallel to your mouth, but hopefully tilt it a little bit upwards so that the grease is running towards your mouth at all times, because this generally happens when you get lazy and your hand falls below your mouth level.
Another hazard that we need to let our fans know about is concealed spiciness. You talked about literally hot foods, but there's also another way food can be hot, and it's by being extremely spicy. And spicy foods can be a real sneaky devil. And if you're not a fan of spice, then too much spiciness is going to make the food absolutely inedible. And even those who like spice probably have their threshold. And if your taste buds are scorched on the first bite, then your whole meal is ruined. That's why you have to ask a lot of stupid questions when you're ordering something like buffalo wings. You say, like, are these hot wings hot? Which is completely a stupid question. And even the most well-meaning server is going to give a stupid, useless answer. Yeah, pretty hot. Depends on how much you like them hot. And so what do you do? Well, here's some tips when you're thinking about spicy foods, concealed spice. First, take a look at your menu for context. The menu is going to provide some clues. If they have a thermonuclear as an option, then the regular buffalo wings are probably right in your wheelhouse. Another big tip here is just order some backup food. If you've never tasted the food at this place and you want to get wings or something like that, go ahead and get two meals. Go ahead and get two sets of wings. Get the ones that are, you know, you think are going to be at your threshold, and then maybe some that are right below your expected threshold. That way you're not going to ruin your meal. What's the worst that happens? Too much food? Hardly a problem. And then one very particular tip is do not underestimate mustard. You like mustard? I like mustard. Yeah, it sounds exciting, sounds delicious, but pretty much always ask for mustard on the side. Mustard in all forms is notoriously overused, and it can be sneaky. The first bite probably will seem okay, maybe just mustardy, nothing to fear. But then if it's hot mustard, and there's this stuff called English mustard that doesn't call itself hot, that stuff will go right up your nose and never let go. And even if you can live through that first bite, good luck scraping the rest of it off your sandwich or whatever it is. I actually just today went out to lunch with a friend of mine, and we both got burgers. And the burger did describe that it had like a spicy mustard on it. No description could have prepared us for not only the spiciness of the mustard, but the amount of mustard they put into it. It was slathered on both buns of the burger with reckless abandon. And... This was supposedly a good burger that I think had some truffle oil on it and some coleslaw on it. You could taste nothing but this mustard. And to the point I actually had like an explosive episode where I took my second bite and I went, and I stood up and I started coughing and I had to step away from the table and I made a scene. And I, like, my nose was running, and I was in my sleeve, like, trying to control the snot and the breathing. And I mean, I had a coughing fit that was more than a small scene in the restaurant. The server came over with, like, a pile of napkins for me because I just, like, I did avoid spitting my food out on my friend's plate, but it was close.
Let's talk chips, Hugh. Specifically, tortilla chips. Let's talk about chips impaling the roof of your mouth. I think we can all relate to crunching into a chip, usually a triangular-shaped tortilla chip, and a shard breaks off and goes right into the top of the mouth, into the soft palate area, and it's quite, quite painful. Like I said, this usually happens with tortilla chips, and I found the thinner the chip, the greater the danger. I feel like it's more like with restaurant-style tortilla chips that are really thin, and for whatever reason, I think when you crunch into them really hard, a lot of debris goes flying, and it can accidentally get trapped kind of up between your tongue or a tooth, and if it's pointed in the wrong direction, that very sharp triangular spear is going to go right up into the top of your mouth. I've impaled myself with a chip to the point where it was just hanging out of the roof of my mouth, like a stalactite. Or is that a stalagmite? I think it's a tight.
It's tight. There's some sort of mnemonic device that's supposed to help you. Tight top.
Top, might, top tight. I'm going to go with that.
Slag tight top, slag might, bottom. Talking about food hazards, I'm going to take this opportunity, as I'll take every opportunity, to shoehorn my favorite hobby into the conversation. And that favorite hobby is walking and eating. But I'll speak more broadly about eating on the go. But first, walking and eating. You gotta look both ways before crossing the street, but especially if you're double fisting some burritos or something. If you live in a big city like I do, your best mode of transport is usually by foot, and that can be treacherous if you're distracted by the best slice of pizza you've ever had. And look, in the city, there's food everywhere you go. I've pretty much taken it that if I have to go at least 2 blocks, I'm getting something to eat on the way. There's just too many opportunities. It might be a necessity or an indulgence or a hobby for urbanites, but avoiding collisions with cars, bike messengers, and vagrants is the hungry pedestrian's duty.
Yeah, you hear a lot about texting and walking now, and you know how some places are even trying to outlaw that. But I think eating and walking is just as dangerous, if not more. And sometimes if you have something really big, it can even impair your field of vision or your line of sight. If you've got a big thing of cotton candy in front of you as you're walking, as you go to take that bite, you can't see in front of you anymore. So you have to be really quick. You know, we've talked about in episode 8 a lot of the good foods for walking and eating, pizza being one of them. Just know that when you're going to be on the go and walking, think about, you know, what can I eat easily that's not going to block my vision.
Speaking of eating on the go, I also want to touch on eating while driving. Texting and driving, you know, is illegal right now, but for those of us who can be more distracted by food than by socializing, the law actually remains pretty forgiving. Eating and driving is not illegal, but for that reason, driver-eaters have to self-police and be responsible. We do not want to beg for a bunch of legislation that doesn't allow us to eat while we're driving. So eat responsibly, people. You got to make sure your car foods are one-handed. You know, it does limit you a little bit, but there's still a lot of options. You know, you're going to get the burger, but not the fries. Maybe some nuggets, but no dipping sauces. Milkshakes, yes. Sundaes, no. Tacos, I don't think so. chips are going to require 2 hands unless you drink them.
Which is dangerous when you're driving.
And we've talked about the chip shard in the eye.
Yeah, you got to flip the corner, apparently. Listen to episode 8, folks, if you haven't heard it.
Eating on the go, a treacherous thing, but a great pastime.
So not all forms of food safety are necessarily physical. We have the psychological aspect of things and kind of getting mentally scarred or damaged in certain situations. And I have a specific situation that I struggle with, and I hope Hugh has some guidance for me or our listeners can contribute, because I don't really know the solution. Every once in a while, we all have to go to the drugstore to pick up something that, let's say, is somewhat embarrassing, whether it be family planning type stuff or personal care of whatever nature it might be. And it's obviously an embarrassing situation. So I will always pick up something else to go along with it. But then I'm like, it's so obvious I'm just buying a soda just because I don't want to just buy this, you know, ointment or whatever it is. So then I might buy something else, like some chips and soda. And then I'm like, at what point am I safe? And then I tell myself, well, these people have seen it all. The cashier doesn't care. So I'm like, maybe I should just buy the thing and get out of here. So it almost turns into a food justification, but yep. I obsess over, I usually just buy one thing and then I regret it. Immediately afterwards, I'm like, I look like an idiot. Like that cashier knows exactly what I was doing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, look at the sucker buying a soda with the anti-itch fungal cream. He's just trying not to be embarrassed. So I don't know. What's the best practice on this? Do you think it's a justification opportunity? Because mentally, it tears me up for a good day and a half after I go in and do this.
I think if you embrace it as a justification, I think you might free yourself a little bit. Person behind the counter has seen it a million times, and they know you're adding that on just as a diversion. In fact, I bet the bigwigs up at corporate, they count on it. They know when they sell these embarrassing
it
items.
It probably has a name.
They
it's
need
on
to
a
do
pie
an
chart
add-on
somewhere.
Sale
right.
of the other thing, the distraction item, they probably call it. And
it's probably true, actually. There's probably a pie chart somewhere in CVS corporate headquarters.
If you keep the Snickers bars near the pregnancy test, or who knows, you know, there's some correlation, I'm sure. I think the answer is to brace it as a food justification. Pick something you want. Pick something you like.
I never really thought of it as a justification until I was just talking about it and saying maybe if you just keep buying stuff. I think if you have five food items and then one embarrassing item, then hey, we're just picking up a bunch of stuff.
You're a man with crotch fungus who loves Doritos. Rod, I want to talk about germs. Germs are definitely the kind of thing we need to be worried about. How worried? I don't know. I'm a big hand washer. That goes without saying. I live in an urban environment, so dirty hands are kind of the biggest challenge, especially with the walking and eating. Always keep a wrapper around your food if you're doing the walking and eating in the city. You don't want to touch your food. Definitely check out our website. Don't be afraid to drink foods like chips. There's a chart on the Hungry Dad's website about how to drink chips. A big feature of that is that you don't have to pick up the chips with your dirty hands. Also, you know, germs, ground germs, the 3-second rule. It's a nice little gimmick that justifies eating food off the ground. I stand by the 3-second rule or the 4-second rule or the 5 or 6 or 7-second rule. But frankly, if it take that long, you probably don't even want the thing.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. This may have been the walking and eating episode, but I don't remember. Didn't you admit to having dropped a Twix on the New York City sidewalk and brushing it off? I mean, I'm all for it, but
I absolutely admitted to it there. Deviously, what I did was I dropped it, picked it up, put it in my pocket until I got a few blocks away, and then I ate it because I didn't want anyone to see me eat it off the ground. But I literally just bought this Twix, and I'm not going to.
Who knows what it's been in your pocket? So.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I have an odd amount of confidence that something off the ground, even New York City sidewalk, isn't going to be problematic. But you know what I don't stand for? I will not eat a thing off my kid's plate. I will not eat a thing my kids have touched. Rod, do you eat your kids' unfinished food?
No, almost never. They're just germ magnets.
Yeah, my wife does, and lots of people do, and no judgments there, but I think there are two types of people. Those who eat their kids' unfinished foods and those who don't. One last note on the germs, Rod, and I just want to ask you a quick scenario, a pop quiz, if you will. You're at the buffet, and you witness a sneeze guard perform its job perfectly, fully blocking the sneeze. Would you still eat the mac and cheese underneath it, ever?
I don't think so.
Exactly. And so my point is kind of like, it's not really a sneeze guard. There is no such thing as a sneeze guard. It's a nice device and it's a decent name, but it's a misnomer of a name.
It's an interesting philosophical discussion.
Could it even stop a sneeze?
Well, it's obviously better than having someone sneeze directly into the mac and cheese. But if you see it, you're still not going to eat it. I guess it's more if you don't see it. Stop most
but,
of the snot.
But that's true with or without the sneeze guard.
Well, without the sneeze guard, more snot's going in.
Oh, I agree, but your decision to eat or not eat
well, yeah.
is completely unaffected by the sneeze guard. And the sneeze guard, I don't think, number one, I don't think it actually blocks the sneeze. But even if it does, I don't think it's going to convince any of us that we're safe.
I do appreciate that the sneeze guard is just called the sneeze guard. I think there's too much political correctness out there, and I think they've just come out and said what it is rather than calling it a transparent sloping roof or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. I mean, I think the only true sneeze guard is like a wall. Like, that's the only thing that actually would block a sneeze. Yeah, I don't know if it needs a new name, because I don't think it's just about sneezing. Sneeze, cough, breath, barrier. Pseudo barrier. I just think sneeze guard is kind of an oversell for what it actually is. I love a buffet. I really do love a buffet. And I appreciate the sneeze guard, but don't let that name fool you, folks.
Hugh, let me ask you this, and maybe this is only a problem that I have, but as you're eating something with a fork, have you ever taken a bad bite and kind of bitten down on the very end of the fork with your incisors and have extreme pain?
I think I have. Honestly, I think it was, yeah, I have. And it
you
was
would
as
know
a kid.
It
was as a kid, and I instantly think of like, kind of like a cartoon character when they're like, their head rattles, and that's what I remember. But not since I was a kid, Rod. Is this a real hazard in your life?
Yeah, it happens to me, I don't know, maybe once a year or every 6 months, maybe. Probably more than the average person for some reason. I think I'm a careless fork eater. Because it's not fun, folks. I don't know why or what the physics behind it is or if it has something with your teeth or...
I think it's a depth perception problem. That's my guess.
Well, that might be the cause, but the pain is just real. And it's... I think it somewhat goes back to your whole biting your tongue and your mouth and just being frustrated and kind of ruins everything. Also, like I said, you know, I've been using forks for 40 years and I should know how to use them. And when I do this, I've done it so often that I try to take notes of like what's happening around, like what am I eating? Was I eating too fast? What was the situation? But I found no discernible pattern as to why this happens. And it's just it's like the very tip of the fork, like right on the incisor. And it is a terrible, terrible feeling. So folks, hopefully this has never happened to you. It sounds like Hugh has mastered the fork since he was a kid.
Yeah, so I just picked up a pen to mimic some eating. I wish I had some food in front of me. And I have a couple thoughts. First of all, I think your risk is increased when it's a large piece of food that would mask the depth of the fork into the food. I'm thinking of a leafy salad where it's kind of the prongs are kind of lost in there a little bit, maybe a large piece of cake. But
now that you say that, I think it's happened with salad before.
I think salad might be a culprit there. And another difference in a salad is I think there's a necessity to bite before the food's in your mouth. So I'm imagining eating a piece of meat right now. And I don't know about you, I'm using a fork. There seems to be a sucking that occurs before the chewing.
You slide it off the fork, yeah.
And it's before I take a bite of that meat, it's solidly in my mouth and solidly off my fork. I've sucked it, slurped it off, and I'm chewing. And the fork is already like out in front of me. But a salad, it's bigger, and you can't really slurp it off the fork. You need to do a bite and grab.
You have to
like
open wide.
A T-Rex or something.
And maybe this is something, too. Like, a salad's very light. So you have less kind of feel for where the fork is within the salad. With a heavier object, like a steak, I'm picturing, like, you kind of can feel like where the fork is within this heavier object.
Let's pick this up the next episode. I'm kind of going to play a Murphy's Law here. It's going to happen to me in the next week. I just feel like it's going to happen sometime soon.
I hope it does.
And I actually think now that you brought it up, it's going to become like a chronic problem in my life, and I'm not going to be able to shake it. I feel like you've cursed me here because it's going to get in my head.
I hope it does. And I think the main takeaway, though, is don't eat salads, folks. Just don't eat salads.
Rod, one hazard I want to talk about is milk coming out of the nose. All I really want to ask is, what's the deal with milk coming out of people's noses? Why milk? Is milk more prone to travel up the nasal cavity? What about orange juice? Tomato juice up the nose? Why is everybody laughing at their milk? Is milk that funny? Let's give milk a sitcom.
That was good. You do a pretty good Seinfeld.
I do a good impression of someone trying to do an impression of Seinfeld.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the dad side of the Hungry Dads and dropping food on baby. If you're a dad, you've probably eaten while having a baby nap maybe on your chest or having it strapped into a carrier of some sort. There's going to be a time when you're trapped with baby underneath you and you're starving. And you need some food, and you just can't wait. Of course, never eat anything hot over baby. Nothing piping hot, that's always a bad idea. Anything that can scald baby's head if you drop it on top of baby. So that's right off the bat. Hopefully, if your wife's around, she's not going to agree to bring you anything hot in the first place. Secondly, you know, babies can't have peanuts because they may be potentially allergic. I don't think you can eat anything with nuts over a baby. There's always a small chance that it's going to drop down in their hair or kind of on their hands and they're going to wake up and kind of put their hand in their mouth and there you go. I think that might be something that not a lot of people think of, but I would not recommend eating, you know, a granola bar with nuts or any sort of candy bar with nuts at all. It's just too dangerous.
Those kids that put everything in their mouths, it's just another way kids kind of ruin our eating.
Exactly. No choking hazards, no grapes, nothing like that. Nothing too messy. It really limits things. So, you know, what are some easy to eat things that you can eat while hovering over baby. I think bread, I mean, it's not super sexy, but you can always eat a slice of bread, a loaf of bread. If you've got a roll, that'll be really good. It's filling, it's easy, it's not dangerous, it's the most basic of things. So I think bread's always safe in any situation. Bring up another one of my favorites I've talked about a lot on the show, beef jerky. Very, very easy to eat.
Not crumbly. Not going to drop a dollop of beef jerky.
Nope. If you do, you deserve to have the baby eat it. And the baby will probably enjoy a beef jerky, quite frankly.
Yeah, let me do a quick callback to a couple of things. The Grease Valley of Death and walking and eating. Because where I live in New York, especially when my daughter was young, it was a common scenario where I'd be walking with my daughter Bjorn in front of me and I'd pass a pizza place. And one pro tip I've got is in New York, and I've shared it before, is don't be afraid to order your slice cold, or more specifically, as we call it, just like that. They have slices, they'll warm it up for you, which is always lovely, but if a lukewarm slice of pizza is actually pretty darn tasty, and there's no possibility of a Grease Valley of Death with a lukewarm slice of pizza. You can enjoy it with your baby right below you, nothing to worry about, and you can be on the move, be parenting, and be enjoying a slice of pizza.
So at this point in the show, we were going to cover Hot Pockets, but as you may have heard in episode 39, Tastemakers Jim Gaffigan, Mr. Gaffigan has pretty much nailed this subject and has probably 30 minutes of material just on the Hot Pocket. So there's really nothing more that can be said other than if you eat a Hot Pocket, you will be hurt.
As they said, you know, there's really been nothing new since Shakespeare, and there's really been nothing new to say about Hot Pockets since Gaffigan. Gaffigan is the Shakespeare of Hot Pockets. The scientific establishment, or at least the internet, has said that we need to chew each of our bites 32 times. Don't know if you've heard of this. It's a tough safety rule to follow, especially with Jell-O. The desire to swallow is paramount. You're eating something gross, you want it out of your mouth as soon as possible. If you're eating something tasty, you want to make room for another fresh, delicious bite. Whether 32 times or not, adequate chewing is an important step to take. You've heard of this thing, you got to chew each bite 32 times. You ever heard of that before?
I've heard you have to chew it quite a bit. I never heard 32 specifically, but...
I do think that there is an actual legitimate benefit to chewing, and I challenge our listeners, next time you sit down for a meal, try the 32 chew challenge. I actually think 32 is a little bit high, depending on what you're eating.
It sounds very high.
You know, I've actually very legitimately, like, you know, I've had stomach issues from time to time, and one suggestion was just make sure you really chew up your food. And I actually found if I went out of my way to make sure I chewed up all my food, I actually didn't have as much abdominal discomfort. For all of our jokiness tonight, this is a very serious tip. Chew your food. We're not ducks.
It is the first step of the digestive process. I do know that. So sticking with a scientific theme, we can't have a food safety issue without talking about the classic problem of brain freeze. I'm sure you're familiar with brain freeze, Hugh. Most people probably are. If you eat or drink something too fast, you will get a sharp and very uncomfortable headache. This is caused actually as a defense mechanism by your body. So your body is telling you to stop eating such a cold thing so quickly because if you were able to do that for a long period of time, it could adversely affect you. It could create a bad situation. Your body temperature would go down. So that's why, I mean, it might be impossible just from a standpoint of it would become uncomfortable in your mouth and your stomach. But it's kind of the first step is your brain saying, hey, what's going on? And getting a little more scientific, it's actually a lot of blood flowing to your brain quickly to warm it up, to make sure it stays warm enough, because it's obviously the most important organ in your body. So when you're downing that snow cone or ice cream too fast, that's what's happening. Your body is telling you, hey, idiot, stop it. I don't know if you know this, Hugh, but this is something I actually heard quite a while ago, like as a kid, before the internet or anything. And it's one of those things that when I heard it, I think another friend of mine told me, and I was pretty young, so I thought, they're just being stupid. This doesn't work. They said if you rub your tongue to the roof of your mouth really, like, vigorously, it will stop the brain freeze. And it works. It works for me, and I think it works for most people. It's on the internet now. It's a pretty proven solution. If you don't know about that pro tip, if you're getting the brain freeze, just go to the roof of your mouth with your tongue. The roof of your mouth is actually the sensor area where your body is sensing how cold it is, and that's what triggers it. So if you can warm it up with your tongue through friction, brain freeze gone.
A let's end this discussion where meals always end, in the bathroom, folks. I want to talk about the calculated risk of poopage. You're out to eat amongst friends or on the road or maybe even on a date, and unwittingly or maybe knowingly, your favorite meal is one that is going to cause a significant gastrointestinal issue. You want to carry some Imodium with you all the time. One big thing to think about is who you're with and if you're comfortable taking a 10 to 15 minute bathroom break at the end of the meal while your friends are in the lobby. And then always consider your next destination. If it's a New York apartment, for instance, the bathroom's usually just adjacent to the living room.
Yeah.
And you're on a date, you're going to want to be aware of that. Probably tread lightly unless you're really amongst a trusted individual. You can find yourself in some pretty awkward situations if you're not really thinking ahead about how this meal might have an effect on you. You know, if you're at the hungry dad stage, a lot of times this stuff's less important. I'm not afraid to eat what I want and take my time in the bathroom before my family and I head home. But maybe if you're in a transitional phase of life on a date, play it safe.
Actually, at this point, I rather enjoy spending quite a bit of time in the bathroom, especially at a restaurant. It's kind of a safe haven.
This is actually a true story. We were playing a game last week with my daughter where we were just talking about what your three favorite things are to do. And her announcement for me, and this is 100% true, were using my iPad, eating sandwiches, and spending a lot of time in the bathroom. That is what she said Daddy likes to do. And if you're a fan of the podcast, it's entirely possible that I'm doing all three at once.
Hungry Dads. Visit our website at hungrydads.com. Follow us on Twitter at hungry_dads. This has been a Hungry Dads production.
Hello, and welcome to episode 70 of the Hungry Dads podcast. I'm Hugh Gallen.
Was that a joke?
Oh, did that sound weird again?
Well, you said you're Hugh Gallen.